And the weather now with Ben Lewis.
Yeah, your weather today is highs of 13 degrees, lows of 8 degrees, a dry day, variable cloud, with bright or sunny spells.
Ben Lewis. Probably the best reason to visit Brighton there's ever been.
Exercise is good for you, laziness is not. And a best way to actually get involved with exercise and so on is clearly to get involved with the British Heart Foundation and their Marathon May that's being launched today as we sort of prep at the beginning of April to find out what we're doing in May and also to hopefully keep fit and healthy. Now, to address the reasons behind this, we're delighted to welcome two fabulous individuals. First of all, senior cardiac nurse from the British Heart Foundation, and she's from Nottingham as well. It's the legendary Lucy Wilkinson. How are you, Lucy?
I'm very well, thank you, Alex. How are you?
Very good indeed, and also equally legendary, someone who's actually had heart disease herself, but is still doing wonderful stuff, Harriet Mulvaney. Good morning, Harriet. How are you?
Hi, I'm very well, thank you.
Harriet, if we could come to you first with respect to your particular story about the whole surprise, because one of the things that came to the fore when I was sharing this little news story with some of my students this morning was, goodness, 46, that sounds very young to have a heart a condition and so on. It can strike at any age.
Yes, absolutely. I was actually 44 when I had a heart attack, and certainly was not something that I was expecting to have to deal with at such a young age. It was not on my plan, on my radar at all.
Which is one of the reasons why, clearly, working from the premise that prevention is better than cure, Lucy, the notion of keeping physically active is something which has been shown time and time again to actually reduce the risk of heart disease.
Yeah, a really important risk factor for heart disease is physical activity. We know that there's about 20 million people in the UK that aren't active enough, and that is increasing their risk of heart disease and, unfortunately, early death. So it's really something that we're really encouraging people to get active and improve their heart health.
Lincoln this weekend has just had its 10K marathon, but clearly gearing up for May, there's a tremendous opportunity to not only raise funds for British Heart Foundation. In fact, last year you managed to raise over £1 million for this particular routine, but also to take part, not necessarily in a one-off marathon, but to actually do a marathon for May.
Yeah, exactly. So the My Marathon Challenge is about running the marathon over the month of May in as little as a mile a day. It's about taking on that challenge. You can do that with family, with friends, and raising money for our life-saving research.
We've been seeing the various posters around the world, parts of certainly the northeast, saying that you exercise, if you walk briskly, that can be much more important. Does the marathon have to be running, or can you actually do brisk walking as well?
It can be brisk walking, so anything that gets your heart rate up and your breathing a bit heavier is classified as moderate intensity physical activity, and that's what we're talking about when we're talking about the government guidelines for activity. So as long as you're feeling a bit out of breath but able to hold a conversation and your heart rate's up, then that's really what we're looking for.
Harriet, last year, of course, you were responsible for raising over £1,500 for the BHF, British Heart Foundation, from that point of view. You've taken on the challenge of running 26.2 miles over the month of May. Is it as mountainous a challenge as perhaps it might first seem? I mean, there might be a list of things, well, I can't possibly do 26.2 miles. It's hopeless.
No, I would say it's totally achievable. I'm not the world's best runner by any stretch of the imagination, and I certainly would never take on a marathon in one go. What's great about this challenge is that you can break it down into completely manageable chunks, and you can run it, you can walk it, you can do a mile at a time, you can do less than a mile at a time. It's totally manageable, and I think it's that sometimes the mental hurdle is the biggest challenge to overcome. So breaking it down into these sort of small bite-sized chunks makes it a target that everyone can achieve, and doing it with friends, with family, makes it fun and enjoyable as well.
And just sharing your story of how you were diagnosed with spontaneous coronary artery dissection, the tale of how you were just about to brush your teeth when you started to experience pain in your chest, neck and jaw, this all led on to obviously you being diagnosed with heart challenges.
Yes, that's right. It was totally unexpected, just struck out of the blue one night. I was, as I said, brushing my teeth and sort of experienced the chest pain and just imagined it would go away. Certainly didn't think it was going to be a heart attack, it carried on and the symptoms developed. I think over the period of about 5 to 10 minutes realised that actually this was quite serious and gradually began to feel very unwell. But still didn't quite believe it until I got the diagnosis that I had actually had a heart attack and was now living with a heart condition. So it is a terrible shock, and it just goes to show that it can strike everybody. And even though I've had one heart condition, I'm not immune from other heart conditions. So being physically active and maintaining that level of activity is really important to me.
Indeed. Lucy, you spent over 3 years working in Australia. Did you find any difference there? Are Australians intrinsically fitter and better and stronger than their Brit counterparts, or is it pretty much the same no matter which side of the hemisphere you're based in?
I think it's pretty similar no matter which side. Obviously, the weather makes it a bit easier to exercise outside when you're in Australia, but the days are getting lighter now and the weather is getting a lot better here. So I think that's encouraging for people to get outside and get joining in on my marathon.
And presumably you don't have to have a silly costume to wear if you're doing the marathon. You can actually, you can if you wish, of course, have a silly costume, but it's not a precursor. You don't have to sort of get dressed up as a giant big bird or something.
Absolutely not. It's about making running accessible, so just getting outside, around where you live, out in the countryside if you can, and getting to that 26.2 miles.
OK, so in terms of 26.2 miles is the target. How can people get in touch with the British Heart Foundation to find sponsor forms and various other things to ensure that they can also raise funds for the BHF as well?
So you can sign up online by visiting www.bhf.org.uk/mymarathon. There's loads of hints and tips on there about how to get started and running regimes, and there's also healthy food ideas and things like that as well. So loads of pointers on there. And like I said, we had more than 30,000 people take part last year and raised over £1 million. So we're really hoping we can top that this year.
I'm sure with respect to your motivation, Lucy, and Harriet's motivation, and when you've got Gemma Bath producing as well, it's going to be motivations galore on that basis. So it's a win-win situation. Lucy Wilkinson and Harriet Mulvaney, many thanks indeed. And good luck with My Marathon. I'm sure we'll be running for the month of May. Many thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
1960s, the SSAFA was established, an acronym which stands for Soldiers, Sailors, Airmen and Families Association. So to say it again, the Soldiers, Sailors, Airmen and Families Association. And now we're in the 21st century. Things have obviously changed in terms of the SSAFA's charity work and adoption service, working with local authorities and indeed the armed forces to support families with housing and educational needs. And we're delighted today to be able to welcome two fine folk. First of all, adoption team manager from the SSAFA. That would be Jill Fallery. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
And a case study, in fact, somebody who's actually successfully adopted through the wonderful organisation. That's Sally, obviously based in Hampshire. How are you, Sally?
I'm very well, thank you.
Sally, if I can come to you first, just share with us your own particular case study, because you've obviously been an army nurse. You joined the military in 1992. You started a family. Really, the SSAFA was fairly critical in terms of ensuring that you could adopt.
Yeah, when we first thought about adopting, we went to the local authority and they basically turned us down on the fact that we were a military family. And from there, we went to SAFA. SAFA understood the military lifestyle. They understood the sort of challenges that we would face and made the process sort of, you know, reasonably straightforward from that point onwards. And basically provided support through us throughout the whole journey.
I'm pleased you said SAFA there, because I wasn't sure whether we actually have to refer to the SSAFA and throughout. Yeah. It's not quite as easy as SAFA. Coming back to Jill, talk to us about the sort of thinking behind, obviously, establishing the organisation and your own role as adoption team manager.
Yeah, well, SAFA, the Armed Forces Charity, established the adoption service in order to address some misconceptions at times and discrimination faced by some potential military adopters such as Sally and Zoe. My role, I'm a team manager at SAFA and I work with my social workers who are very experienced and have a real understanding of the military lifestyle to support military personnel to adopt and to provide homes for children who've experienced trauma and abuse.
This is obviously a key point in terms of that, because that's one of the aspects that SAFA's begin to build its reputation, really, working with local authorities and, of course, the armed forces, supporting families with housing and educational needs. Have you seen an improvement over the years, or is this something which, again, as a challenge, is going to be ever with us, really?
No, I think there definitely has been an improvement and there are definitely some local authorities are very positive about working with military families, and we've got some excellent relationships with local authorities who place children with our adopters, because they actually have seen the actual quality and resilience that SAFA adopters show. There are some other local authorities, obviously, that are less experienced with working with military adopters and maybe have some more inflexible views and misconceptions about military families. But yeah, I definitely think on the whole there has been an improvement.
Sally, returning to yourself, I mean, back in 2008, you took the decision with your partner Zoe to adopt three brothers. They were then aged 3, 4, and 9. What kind of challenges did you actually face, or has it all been plain sailing?
No, we faced sort of challenges along the way. Everything from sort of dealing with their sort of temper outbursts to dealing with schools, trying to make them understand the sort of position of an adopted child. But lots of fun things as well.
Yeah, of course, you were relocated to Germany shortly after adopting for 2 years. I mean, that presumably in terms of the cultural aspect would have been an interesting experience as well.
Yeah, that was. I mean, that was our choice. So we chose to go out to Germany because we wanted to sort of like, you know, make the most of the opportunities that we could for the boys. And it was great. I mean, Germany is very child-centred. It's very family-orientated. And it really sort of, you know, opened the boys' eyes in terms of sort of, you know, places to live and experiences and culture. It was great.
Gwen, returning back to Jill, looking at some of the figures here, 62% of children in care are over 10 years old. It is obviously a difficult time when you know a child is coping with this side of things, etc., from both sides. And presumably, you from your own perspective, you prepare and talk quite extensively with prospective parents who wish to adopt.
SAFRA Adoption Service, we really work hard to prepare the adopters for the challenges ahead. We ensure that they have preparation training. And also, I think one of the exceptional things about SAFRA adopters is that they are open to considering harder to place children. So they are the older children. The sibling groups such as Sally and Zoe, adopting three children is a real challenge. But we found that military families are really in a good position to be able to support such children, because they have this can-do attitude and they're not fazed by lively children and often have a really good active lifestyle as well, which is great.
And that is one of the key elements, because clearly, from the perspective of, I suppose, cliches, there is this notion that families won't be able to provide stability for children if you're in the military, and because they don't have the structure of a 9-to-5 working day and so on. Actually, traditions have changed and evolved, and presumably it's very difficult to actually find what you would describe as the typical routine for parents and families, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, as Sally was saying, actually, there are opportunities there for children to experience different cultures and different lifestyles. But ultimately, I think the message we want to get across is that military families can provide stability for a child and opportunity as well along the way.
Indeed, safe, stable and loving, the key things from the line of things. What's the best way, if people are actually listening to this and they might never even consider SAFRA in terms of a way forward, if they're working through that perspective, how would you recommend they proceed, Jill?
I would recommend that they go to the website. If they search SAFRA, the Armed Forces Charity, there are pages there and you'll be able to go along to the adoption pages, and it gives you details to access the service there.
And as clearly we're in 2017 at present, Sally, presumably your three sons, are they setting up a boy band now? Are they doing all sorts of other areas, having obviously moved into the teenage years in full?
Yeah, I mean, boy band was on the cards a few years ago.
I thought
ago.
It might have been somewhere. Yeah.
It's now more moving toward the building trade, actually. It's sort of, you know, carpenter, plumber, that sort of, and electrician, you know.
Well, there we are, obviously. You could do both, of course. There is that line from that perspective. Jill and Sally, many thanks indeed. It's been a fascinating piece in terms of SAFRA. It sounds so much better than SSAFA, which is great stuff. And we certainly appreciate your time. We wish you all the very best for the foreseeable future. Take care now.
Thank you.
There we are. Fascinating tale. Fascinating people. Morning Edition continues. The Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Thursday, April the 6th. And Eva McDonald's back in the studio.
Hello. Hi,
Eva. Yay. So exciting. We thought I'd give you a little bit of air guitar there to work its way through its own magical routine. We may be going to William Sitwell. Louis Savvy has kind of vanished.
Saving lives,
which is what he does. Holly has vanished as well. She's headed off. So it's Eva and Ben to guide us through the remaining 1,800 seconds or half hour or so of the programme, when hopefully we will shortly be able to say, William Sitwell, are you there?
picture, it becomes so clear. You always have the biggest heart when we're 6,000 miles apart. Too much of no sound, uncomfortable silence can be so loud. Those three words are never enough when it's long distance love. You always have me more miles away. I hear it in your voice, we're miles away. You're not afraid to tell me miles away. I guess we're at our best, we're miles away. So far away, 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 so far away.
You're listening to Siren 107.3. Good morning. Time now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend, who is William Sitwell.
Yay, he's back. William is back. And the citizens of Lincoln can just generally go crazy, William. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Alex.
We have Eva MacDonald in the studio.
Hello,
Eva MacDonald.
And we have Ben Lewis also in the house as well.
Morning.
Not Ben Lewis.
Me again.
Clearly, last week, William, you missed the denouement from our point of view of one of our midweek drivettes who was appearing with her husband, Mr. Dylan Royce, on Couples Come Dine With Me. Both Ben and I have had little wagers on what your immediate response will be to the whole essence of Couples Come Dine With Me, or indeed the whole Come Dine With Me scenario. But what pray tell, would be your initial sort of line if somebody, well, about the genre of Couples Come Dine With Me? Because I described it, and this is not to indicate any way, shape or form, as really Come Dine With Me is a bit like the National League, whereas William, with, of course, the cooking programmes he's involved with, MasterChef and so on, is something like the Premier League. But William, you may sort of think the reverse.
This is a TV show you're talking about, right?
Nice. Exactly, yes.
Never watched it, but anything that gets people cooking, anything that brings people together, that's good by me.
Which is fair comment, actually.
Can't comment on the standard, though. I think it's good. They're completely different in terms of standards, though.
He hasn't got the time to use Channel 4's watch again frequency to actually look at the pigeon opening sequence that was actually there and the rest of the material that was there. I'm sure it was all very tasty. Anyway, as she said, she came joint second, which was marvellous. Meanwhile, the many facades of Edith Sitwell has been launched. A relative of yourself, William, of course.
Yes, you've been looking at the Facebook. There's a couple of academics in the United States. They produced a study of the great woman. Mm-hmm. I'm yet to see it, but anything that raises her profile as her literary executive, someone who manages her estate, is good news.
Well, I've certainly gone ahead and liked it just at this very moment in time. But pray tell, William, you've been globetrotting to America, to all sorts. Share with us where you've been over the last few weeks when we have been Sitwell-less in this time slot.
Where have I been? I've been in Miami, I've been in Jamaica, I've been in Spain.
Now, clearly, when you're in Spain, coming back to the first part of the programme, did the Gibraltar question come up by any chance?
No, funnily enough, but it was. I was in Spain before Theresa May issued her Article 50 letter, in which she forgot to mention Gibraltar.
Yes.
So, but I mean, obviously, the Brits have been invading Spain for years, and I think it's time we did it properly. You know, if they lay a finger on any of our monkeys on that big rock.
You see, this is what we were thinking about in the early part of the programme when Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar was saying, it's okay. I thought, no, you're in the position of actually being a Gibraltarian, and it's important to actually work our way through this, just as Michael Howard, of course, was quoting Margaret Thatcher 35 English years ago. Go back even further, and the Chancellor of the Exchequer actually only enabled people to take £50 out of the country and no more. If you were going to Europe, you were not allowed to take any more than £50 out of the country, according to James Callaghan, who was then Chancellor of the Exchequer. Maybe we should return to those days, William. What do you think? Maybe if you have any more than, say, £500...
Pocket money.
Yeah, exactly. Money, yeah. You're not allowed to actually leave the country.
Well, we need to keep all our money here, don't we, really?
Exactly. So don't give it to Johnny Foreigner. Just store exactly. it in the door. Obviously,
especially those of us who take the leap and send our children to private schools, oh. who are now under a Labour government, having to face the prospect of adding VAT, despite the fact that if you send your child to a private school, you're actually paying for education twice, yep. once through the tax system and second. That way. But anyway.
It's not a political programme. We could have it if you wish, but we thought we'd ease away from that. You know. What are you doing the washing up at present, William? Are you,
no, I'm making I'm making some breakfast, actually.
Oh,
I'm cooking... this is my breakfast special, so I do a bit of toast, a bit of butter, a little bit of Marmite, avocado on the top, then two peeled boiled eggs that are soft in the middle, some salt and pepper, and then a little bit of... I'm trying to find the chilli flakes at the moment. Someone's put them somewhere.
Dare I ask, this Marmite you've just added, is it as a result of the recent news article?
No, I think Marmite, I love Marmite. I found the chili flakes. Marmite avocado eggs, it's great. It gives you a little sort of, another kind of je ne sais quoi, you know, to the dish. It's a very good idea. I recommend it thoroughly to anybody.
I think that just sort of sums up in so many ways. And just in case people were wondering and felt we didn't sufficiently actually welcome the news, yes, William has just found the chili flakes.
Celebration.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think it's important in this world in which sometimes the bottle's posited as being half empty, that when finding the chili flakes live on air, suddenly people realise that Britons can party with the best of them. The flags and the bunting is out in Lincoln, and we're just generally celebrating.
Although the pot of Marmite was worryingly empty. Oh. So not everything is a trial.
Running low.
Do you know, that could almost be the 21st century's answer to Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. The chili flakes have been found, but the pot of Marmite is worryingly empty.
We'll find a spare jar in the cupboard somewhere.
Well.
Yeah, these are just our first world problems.
Yeah. Eva.
Yes, actually, this is probably a random question, but this morning I had eggs for breakfast. And I always like to make scrambled eggs, but this morning we ran out of milk, so I did scrambled eggs without milk in it. But is there what way would you say is the nicest way to make eggs on toast? Like, would it be poached, scrambled, fried?
Well, it depends, really. I mean, I do love scrambled eggs. I don't think you need to use milk anyway. I think if you, crack your eggs into a little bit of melted butter and then stir it in the pot, keep stirring. I think the great secret to perfect scrambled eggs is let's say you do two eggs per person, crack one extra egg in just before the end of the process,
okay.
and stir that one in, because then you've got a bit of extra egg, a bit of extra fresh runny egg, which I find is delicious.
Oh, right, okay, I'll try that. I did.
But my boiled eggs, which I'm about to cut into now. Oh, yes, perfectly runny in the middle. Little Burford Browns. Very nice, too.
Do you know, for a moment I thought he was vying
Make for... Make a belly rumble.
Exactly. He was vying for the Nigella roll there of actually sort of runny eggs.
Exactly.
Marvellous. Ben?
Yeah, I don't know if obviously you're involved in the new series of MasterChef. Well, I caught up this morning, and I'm up to date with it so far. What are you making so far of the competition? I don't know if you've been watching it yourself, William, but I think it looks quite promising that the candidates that are involved in this year's series.
Well, I'm afraid that I appear in it, but I don't watch it.
Yes. See, that's why
I'm aware that it's happening at the moment. I think I'm on in a couple of weeks. I look forward to it. Look forward to being in the studio.
And in the immortal words of the man.
Hello, this is Greg Wallace, and you're listening to William Sitwell on Siren. The man's far too posh.
They are. You see, he's too. It's important, Greg calling the number as we saw it on that basis. William, we did say we needed to mention the supper clubs that you've actually launched, the first of which, of course, takes place this Friday and is a sellout in more ways than one, really, from that point of view. This whole notion of supper clubs at Weston Hall, was it just some inspiration that struck you one evening when you thought, this is what the world needs?
Well, you know, a desperate man like me, scratching around trying to find extra ways of feeding myself and making a living, I thought that I'd bring my passion for food and entertaining and allow people into our family home. So I've got 48 people across the dining room, the hall, and then a lovely room called the Justice Room, where one of my ancestors used to administer justice to village miscreants and collect rents. And so I've got a brilliant pair of cooks who run a supper club in London called Pelican Canteen, and we're doing a 5-course Middle Eastern feast. We've got rosé wines from Mirabeau, which is a wonderful pink wine producer run by Brits in the south of France. And, yeah, we'll chow down, have a bit of a laugh.
You've got slow-cooked pomegranate lamb with grilled hispy cabbage and fattoush salad. You've got babka with sesame ice cream. You've got harira soup, chickpea, tomato and lentil.
That sounds like a Sitwellian come dine me.
It does, exactly. In many ways, we've come full circle to this side of things.
Yeah, so I've always dreamed of opening a restaurant. Here we go. It appears I'm doing it tomorrow night.
And we've got to also comment on the phenomenal photographs of yourself in Miami and the whole range of images that were put together within that week there, particularly the one looking through the blue skies from that perspective. Photos from the Sitwell Meister himself, really. All we need is Don Johnson and some suitable Miami Vice music, and the world will be complete. Did you feel the need to hum sort of 1980s American sitcom, American crime drama series when you were in Miami?
Honestly, Alex, no.
That's okay then.
Miami is it's a vibrant city, and there's something amazing about when you travel to that part of the United States and you have jet lag. You wake up at dawn, and to see the sun rise up over the Atlantic and then walk along the beach just as the sun appears, it's magical. You look back and there's a sprawling metropolis. Exciting place to be.
Well, this weekend, as Palm Sunday echoes its joys across the world and the Holy Week begins in earnest, Eva and myself will be heading off to the Lincolnshire Showground for Countryside Links, which is going to be the official launch of spring in so many ways. We have the Make It Zone, the Indoor Food Markets, the Food Zone, Countryside Live. And I think, Eva, I'm going to challenge us both now to get as many name drops for William Sitwell in our little audio postcard as possible. We'll just sort of work the way in, so when we sort of have the whole final package put together and it's released to the world, probably sometime on Monday, we'll sort of have lots of Sitwell name drops in there, that sort of way.
Sounds good to me.
It's a little challenge which yourself, Katie, and myself should be able to attest to. I'll even ask Steve Court to write a poem about William Sitwell.
Okay.
You see, so,
we've got a little shrine to you, William.
Exactly. You know, it's like the fan is there. Well, this is the equivalent bench. The fatted calf is developed as the prodigal son comes back to the Midrick Drive.
Avid Sitwellian fans.
Exactly. And it's brought us round to the time where Eva needs to put those last two questions to you. So off you go, Eva.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Yes, but my eggs are cold.
Oh no!
The Marmite will rescue it. The Marmite will rescue it.
The Marmite. And will we be hearing again from you soon?
Well, you can't put Alex down. You know, he's like a puppy.
True. Well,
there you have it. And in the words of Dean Martin.
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
I like mine with a kiss.
Boiled or fried,
I'm satisfied as long as I get my kiss.
How do you like your toast in the morning?
I like mine with a hug.
Dark or light,
the world's all right as long as I get my hug. I've got to have my love in AM.
Or the rest of my day is positively mayhem.
I'm a regular monster.
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
I like mine with a kiss.
Up or down?
I'll never frown. Eggs can be almost bliss.
Just as long as I get my kiss.
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
I like mine with a kid.
I like mine with a kid.
Boiled or fried,
I'm satisfied.
As long as I get my kids.
How do you like toast
in the morning?
I like mine with a hug.
I like mine with a hug.
Dark or light,
the world's all right.
As long as I get my hug.
I've got to have my love in AM.
Oh, the rest of my day is positively mayhem.
I'm a regular monster.
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
I like mine with a kiss.
Up or down,
I'll never frown.
Eggs can be almost bliss, just as long as I get my kiss.
It was last week we had Rosie Crust, the founder of Countryside Links, in the studio with us. And it's only days away from when we're going to be there. Ben, you can't actually make Countryside Links this year, can you?
Unfortunately. No, I can't. I am. Duties call.
Well, never mind.
Saving the lives of Lincoln.
Yeah, so Eva will step into the breach tremendously well in her own
music. Will.
Represent me well, Eva.
I'll try my best.
The Eva McDonald Ben Lewis impersonation has to be seen to be believed, frankly.
Exactly. Can't wait for it.
She channels it. It's uncanny, I would say. It's
fabulous.
Uncanny the way she manages to capture the Brighton accent and everything.
I look forward to it.
But Eva, what are you looking forward to from Countryside Links? I mean, we've got the little brochure there. What sort of key elements?
Yeah, actually, I'll just have a look at this. Well, I'm always a fan of food, so I'm going to say the food. And
Neil
the food
Curtis
zone.
Is there, of course, mm-hmm. from Curtis Bakers and Butchers.
Yeah, I think... I mean, I always like the countryside and food. I think those are my favourite different...
We've got the
areas.
Make it zone.
So I'm going to say those two.
Yeah. So the food zone and presumably the farmyard zone or the countryside zone?
Well, it's called the countryside zone, so I'm going to say countryside.
We've got Birds of Prey. We've also got a little bit worried about this next one, of course, because it says Raving Reptiles. Mm. And now, as indeed regular listeners to the Midweek Drive will be well aware, when it actually comes to reptiles, we do clearly have a concern, as voiced by Rachel.
You're listening to the Midweek Drive on Siren FM, guaranteed to keep you safe from giant lizards.
Good news, of course, being that I think we're dealing with giant turtles or tortoises.
Tortoise.
Anyway, they will be there, together with a whole range of other things, and the Birds of Prey are always fun to actually connect. But it does say stay safe here. Remember to wrap up warm and put your wellies on for an amazing day of adventure at the showground.
Sounds good.
Tickets still available. Family ticket, £16. That's two adults and up to two children. Adults, £6. Children, 5 to 16, £3.50. Under fives, completely free. Go to LincolnshireShowground.co.uk to find the tickets. If you book online, I think you can probably just about book online because it's getting very close to the edge now at this particular area. If you pay on the gate, it's slightly more expensive. £18 for a family ticket, £7 for an adult, £4 for children, and the under fives still free. That's the Lincolnshire Showground. Home of Countryside Links, Sunday the 9th of April 2017, the day after I'll actually have returned from Sci-Fi Scarborough, all being well, and interviewed some droids, R2-D2, and a whole heap of other scenarios there. So, Ben, what does the rest of the day have in store for yourself? Are you staying in Lincoln over the Easter period?
I will be, yes. For today in general, I'll be doing some bits of my PR project, which was with LCVS. We did that the other day. We hosted the PR event in Rutland Waters, and we are doing the final bits and bobs for it today, the full presentation and everything else, meet up with some group.
And they've even got a name check on Siren FM's morning show as well. It's quite outrageous. Yeah. We'll be telling you what's going to be
slip it in.
As far as Siren's concerned as the programme proceeds. A little touch now of those Scottish Deacon Blue people.
I saw you turn the big world upside down. Just to find the things that you never want to see. A pale girl in a blue room with a pink dress and a white smile. I need a pink smile on a dark night. On the right girl to sure is right. You've got 3 million things to get mad about. Another 100 things to get glad about. A junk food, the whole world goes good as standing round. So baby, twist and shout, baby.
I thought I would have caught John Wenham out there and gone to his events guide and saw no mention of Countryside Links, but it's there, as we'd expect no less from our events coordinator, John Wenham. Well done, sir. And of course, you can get your event mentioned on Siren FM by simply writing into studio@sirenonline.co.uk, mark it for John Wenham's attention, and then he'd pass it on to the rest of the fine team. You might even have it vocalised in the events guide that comes up on a daily basis here. Later on today, we've got Classic Rock on Siren at 3 o'clock. We've got Legends between 4 and 5, and then Drive Time, strangely enough, between 5 and 7. A precursor to Sound and Country Vision Volume 8, Tessa Snart doing a Dawson Rain special. Yes, Tessa went all the way over to Nottingham, Eva. Nottingham, ooh, exactly.
Nottingham is nice, I do like it there.
And where she actually interviewed the fantastic singer Dawson Rains, who was actually in concert in Nottingham. And it's a very extensive Tessa Snart Dawson Rains sequence there, with some interjections from Camo, based in Nashville. Siren Folk with Alan Ritson at 8 o'clock. And then Spoiler at 10 o'clock. It's not a kind of general... It's an interesting... but not if you like spoilers, because it's about obviously telling things that happen in all manner of wonderful things. And, of course, you can also catch up by going to the Siren website, sirenonline.co.uk. Other details for the Midweek Drive, Midweek Drive Morning Edition, you can find on southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. So that's it then, folks. We have effectively sort of put to bed the first April 2017 edition of the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Thanks to Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Rachel... actually, Rachel Abbott is joining us next week. Louis Savvy, he couldn't join us. William Sitwell, Lucy Wilkinson, and the folk from SAFA, the Services Adoption Agency, that was fascinated there. In the studio, Holly McGretton, thank you. Thanks to Eva McDonald. Have you enjoyed... the last hour, Eva, has it been good for you?
It's been very well, thank you. Very good.
Do you think we've sorted out the Gibraltar situation?
Sorted out is a very big way of putting it. Really? I think we've helped resolve.
I like to think so. I mean, you know, we've already...
We've contributed. We've done our bit.
We've done our bit, yeah.
We've sent in William Sitwell, and we've asked Ian Lennox to get in touch with Rafa Benitez. I don't think we can do much more.
And we've got Gabriella on the ground.
On the case.
On the ground.
She's
exactly. On the ground waiting.
She's all over it, quite literally. We'll be back next week with the Midweek Drive, in which Professor Fiona Moore will be joining us for the Wednesday slot. And then on Thursday, it'll be Ellie Sample, Director of Communications at the University of Lincoln, who should be in this studio.
Woo!
I know. Very exciting. Eva, will you be back next week?
On Thursday?
Yes.
I plan to be, yeah.
Marvellous. One day she might return to the Wednesday as well. We don't know, though. It's
a step up.
I'll try.
Well,
it's been demoted.
It's my job that's taken me over.
It's a rich tapestry of life that's there. To take us up to the news, it's Dirty Laundry with All Time Low, and that little blast of Genesis and I Can't Dance. All we need to do now is what, Ben?
Say goodbye.
Au revoir, farewell, au wiedersehen, goodbye. We could fill for a few more seconds. Or not.
I think a waste of a voice to say goodbye. I don't know.
We hate it, but farewell is such a final sounding word, really. But we'll say
until
it in the case.
Next time.
Until next time.
Abba, thank you for the music.
Yeah, in a strange and bizarre way. I quite like that. So after three, a one, two, three. Thank you for the music.
I don't believe in saints. They never make mistakes. I know it's not my place.